was
you
when
did.
One of my superiors did something that was sexually abusive to me. And after the third one, in order to protect the man who did it, which is what they normally did, they transferred me out of my job. And even though I had been the top graduate in my class, my career was over because of a military sexual assault. And that's another thing, and that's not covered really in the film, but for young women who are thinking of enlisting, the rate of sexual abuse of females in the military is extremely high,
mm-hmm.
extremely high. They usually defend the man. They very often laugh at the woman or just ignore her, and it pretty much always affects her career and very often affects her emotionally for the rest of her life. So that happened to me when I was in the military. Now, my book is actually about trauma that I experienced as a child, a little off the military scope. But the thing about trauma, like a burn, if you think of trauma like a burn, it doesn't matter how you get burned, right?
Yeah.
You have a burn. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you
trauma,
learn.
Whether it's from war or childhood or rape or a car accident or anything that can cause trauma, pretty much has the same symptoms and needs to be treated the same way. And so I call the book Let's Talk About Trauma. It's only 22 pages. It's short. It's up on Amazon for $1.49.
Oh.
And it talks about what I went through because I didn't know about it. Because we don't talk about trauma enough. We don't talk about trauma. It's a hidden illness in our society. And if we had talked about it, I probably would have been diagnosed and treated decades ago instead of being a mature adult and still dealing with the symptoms. So I think it's really important that the whole subject of trauma be brought out in our society. Certainly military veterans are plagued with it. The number of soldiers who come home with either trauma from witnessing a horrific act during the war or the military sexual abuse, they're coming home damaged and need to be taken care of and not laughed at or ignored or disciplined. There's a lot of soldiers who get the symptoms of trauma. They're not treated well. They end up being behaviorally bad off. They do things illegal or whatever. And then they end up getting kicked out of the military on a disciplinary action. They get a bad discharge. It's called getting bad paper. And they can't even get veterans' benefits. It's a huge, huge problem, not only in the military, but in our society. And in some ways, I think all of us experience some level of trauma in our childhood. Everybody had something their mother or father did, right, that affected them. So I think everybody, in some way, should be able to relate to the concept of trauma and understand that, like an injury, like a broken bone, it's something that can be treated. These days, there's a lot of success in various types of treatments. EMDR is one of them. It's an eye movement thing. I'm not sure what it means. But there's a really good success rate in taking the traumatic incident, releasing the emotion from it, and then living a normal life again. Because it's a treatable illness, which people don't even realize.
Hi. Wonderful. It's not, the topic is certainly not far from, what I'd call that, but I'm glad that you had the time to, express a little of that. We also have a guest, Jeffrey Smedberg, who has arrived, and depending on your time, we could we talk about the film a little bit more, too. How do you feel about it?
I could stay on. That's fine. Sure.
All right. We'll see how that goes right now. Okay. I'd like to introduce...
We could turn the light on if you want.
Yeah, we have a phone caller and an in-studio guest who's just arrived, so I'm putting him on the spot a little bit. But he wants to talk a little about, probably more, about the Real Work Festival, a Real Work film festival that's held every May Day. It's going to start pretty soon. It's going to be starting
this
weekend.
Yeah, this is part of the Real Works Festival, which I guess I should have mentioned.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
So Jeffrey's here, and just arrived. Let me get everybody lined up here. So I have Diane Raymond on the phone, and she's going to be hosting Where Soldiers Come From, which is Sunday.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. How are you today?
So, hi, I'm Jeffrey Smedberg. Am I on the air?
Yeah.
Hi.
Can you hear? Yeah. Okay, get your phones adjusted. How are you doing, Diane?
I'm doing good. I'm still here.
All right.
Well, Diane, hi. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Jeffrey. Yep, same here. Daniel Young hooked me up with this, so that was kind of nice. I guess he's on your board.
Yeah. Yeah, we're just having a little headphone issue.
Technical kay. Problems.
So if you can't hear anything, you can take them off. Okay. But anyway, what would you like to start out with as far as work?
That's great. You're going to be at the Where Soldiers Come From event on Sunday night, right?
That's correct, yep.
Yeah, that's excellent.
I'm seeing it.
So one of the great features of that event is that this is one of the first events that's going to be held in the newly opened Vets Hall. It's been closed for 2 or 3 years now.
Yeah, she was saying that, yeah.
And
yeah, you know, they put $1.6 million into that building since it was closed in 2011, just a side tidbit.
Right. So we hope it's a...
Yeah, we're so glad to see it's opening finally.
Right.
Yes, very much
a lot
so.
Of uses for the Vets Hall, and primarily veterans should be able to use it. Sometimes they're turned away, and I've heard accounts of that when they get there. But I hope that's remedied.
Well, as you know, this time around there's going to be insurance issues, which I can't get into, but they've sort of changed some of the policies about it, and it's actually going to be more difficult for us, I think, to use it. But we'll see.
Oh.
Right. Well, the Where Soldiers Come From film is going to be shown. This is going to be the third in the series of events of the Real Work Labor Film Festival for 2014 in Santa Cruz County. We actually have several shows in San Jose at the San Jose City College and also several in Monterey County, but a whole slew of them in Santa Cruz County as well. So this particular film talks about some young men and what led up to them joining the military and what they found out about joining the military that they might have liked to know ahead of time. But the question is, why would this film be included in the Labor Film Festival? Well, in general, the Labor Film Festival includes stories of current and historical cases of working people acting together in united action to improve their lives and improve the lives of their families and their communities. And so we're very interested in what working conditions are like. And certainly joining up for the military is a job. It's a job that people do.
Right.
And in this time in our country's history, there are certain class of people who may find that the military is one of the few jobs that they can get, one of the few jobs that's available to them, one of the few jobs that can help them make a change for their life. Their life might seem sort of dead-ended in the depressed, economically depressed community in which they grew up. And so it's a way out, and you know, a way to get some job training, get some education, maybe still a way to get after the service, get into college, have a brighter future.
And interestingly about that, the last number I heard was of all of the soldiers who sign up for the current GI Bill, only 17% actually get their education out of it. So it's a very underutilized program. People do view this as a job, but in reality, it's a lifestyle. They give up everything to be part of it, and that's one thing that I think you can see in this film is it's not just 9 to 5 and then you got your medical benefits and your vacation time. You sort of give up a lot of yourself to be in the military. And as far as like coming from the poor, depressed parts of the country, there's a term called a poverty draft.
Absolutely.
And that's actually the way that, that's actually, you know, the term that's often used about the fact that so many soldiers are coming into the military out of desperation because there's nothing else available for them in their hometown.
Right, right. We're not in, by showing this film, we're not really trying to put the entire military system in a bad light. I mean, personally, I'm a pacifist, but you know, I'm not gonna use this as a forum to say, you know, get rid of the military. I'm saying if people are going to.
Oh, that's not what I'm saying either.
Yeah, I know.
Don't misinterpret me, please.
Yeah, right. No, no, I'm not. I wasn't saying you were saying that, but I'm just trying to clarify that. You know, we're not showing a film like this that might offer criticism of the current system. It's not a way to say, well, let's do away with the military. In the same way, at the end of our series of films on Tuesday, May 6th, up at Kresge College, you were showing another film about working conditions in the military. It's called The Invisible War. This is from the point of view of female members of the armed services, and talking about the prevalence of sexual assault in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we're looking at it as a sort of a working condition issue. Why is this sort of activity allowed in this workplace? And you know, there's certainly a lot of improvement that could be made within the system.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I mentioned that before you got on the phone.
Good.
That is pretty severe. And
what would it take
to... a high percentage of women.
Yeah, how to have an improvement in the military. What would be required for that?
In the military what?
Simple answer, right? How would you change the working conditions, quote-unquote?
Oh, I couldn't even start going there. it's changing the, you know, I can't make excuses for it, and I don't have a reason for it, except that these are men who are away from home and their testosterone's kicking in, and there's one or two women in their unit, and you know, they kind of get carried away.
So possibly that could change as more women get in the military and the balance male-female changes. Maybe women won't feel so isolated, and I don't know, that's a possible answer.
Yeah, it's possible. Of course, men get abused also. There's a lot of
that's
men
true.
In the military, which is very, very underreported.
Does it have
but
anything
it
to...
a lot. And if they mention it, boy, that's really... they get lambasted if they mention that they got sexually assaulted, so that's a tough one.
And it's not as much to do with the high commanding officers having any say about you know, what's going on in their platoons, or I mean, it's just rampant. It's not just it's all levels, isn't it? Where this abuse
sometimes
is.
Sometimes it's the commanding officer that does the sexual assault, and then the
is that more
is
so?
Stuck.
Yeah,
and the woman is stuck, you know, serving under him even afterwards.
Yeah, that would be interesting to have more of a conversation at some point.
Yeah, but, that could go on a long time.
Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
It's more like the power issue part. Yeah. Anyway.
So we have people, these two films relate to people in the military service. In civilian life, we have sort of job or one class of jobs in civilian life is the sheriffs and the police services. And, you know, sometimes there's a connection. People who've served in the military may tend to, more than others, to get into police work. I'm not sure of the statistics, but it may happen like that. And a very interesting scenario is displayed in another one of the films we're showing, Wisconsin Rising, on Saturday, May the 3rd at the Live Oak Grange, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we're showing a film called Wisconsin Rising. The filmmaker is Sam Mayfield, and she happened to be in Madison doing some interviews about a different topic when the first sit-ins in the Capitol happened a few years ago, and when Scott Walker was attempting to take away union rights from organized workers in the state. And one of his tactics was a divide and conquer tactic. He was going to exempt the policemen and the firemen from the removal of the organizing rights. But that sort of backfired on him because the police and the firefighters saw the blatant anti-union effort here, and they came out in support of all the other public service workers and the others who were facing loss of rights. And that was very significant because not always do, you know, the labor movement, organized working people are not always as united as we'd like. And sometimes it's easy to divide us according to certain lines like that, you know, the law enforcement against the teachers, or the building trades against the healthcare workers, that sort of thing. So this was an example where the working people really joined together, and it was good to see that in Wisconsin, because Wisconsin was really you know, the heart of the building of the labor movement back in the 1930s. Very strong union town there in Madison, a very strong union state.
Well, cool. So, that probably sounds like a good one, too. Now, I have a question for Jeffrey.
Yes.
So now, the movie at the Veterans Hall is free, and it's donations only at the door. I'm wondering, are these other events also free?
Right. It is true, if you don't have any money, you can get in. We like to say that the admission is by voluntary donation. So if you feel generous, we'll be happy to accept your donation. If you're not feeling flush, we want you to see the movie. So
and is that the same like at the Live Oak?
Yes.
At the Grange Hall and the other ones also?
Yeah, all the films in our entire series are like that.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. Very good.
This season we have a total of, I think it was 33 films we're showing at 24 different events. And they're held at about 18 different venues throughout the three-county area.
Wow.
Some like the Vets Hall, you know, just a one-off show there. The Resource Center for Nonviolence, we're actually having 3 shows there during the first week. And it's quite a varied program. And there's the whole range of films, like Wisconsin Rising is just completed now. The filmmaker spent a couple of years trying to piece it all together. We showed kind of a preview of it last year in a very rough cut form, and now it's in its final form and much tighter, and you know, it presents the story in a much more coherent way. So we were very fortunate to be involved, and we actually contributed. Our Real Work organization contributed to the making of that film through a Kickstarter campaign. So we've been following that one and supporting it, and really happy to be able to show it as you know, brand new film.
Cool.
On the other hand, on Sunday, we're having a matinee show at 11 o'clock on this coming Sunday, April the 27th. Oh, it's the morning of the day when you're where soldiers come from, with the Vets Hall in the evening at 7. But in the morning at 11 o'clock at the Nickelodeon Theater, we're showing Salt of the Earth. Now, that's a real classic labor film made in 1954, a dramatization of a New Mexico zinc miner's strike, which happened a couple of years earlier. And that was the time in Hollywood during the McCarthy era that a lot of producers and directors were blacklisted as having communist sympathies. And Herbert Biberman, and who was the director of this film, he was one of those blacklisted. And so he had a lot of trouble making the film. Didn't get a lot of support from the normal powers that be in Hollywood. He did it in, he made the film in rural New Mexico, and then it was, once the film was made, there was sort of kind of a, it was banned. One of the ways that it was banned is that in those days, films were shown in, you know, on reel-to-reel actual film. Now everything's shown from electronic DVDs or other forms of electronic media. But this was real film, and it was quite a talent, quite a skill to operate a film projector. And so all the film projectors in the country were unionized in the IATSE International Film Projectors Union. And the head of that union was a rabidly anti-communist person, and he forbade any of his members from showing that film. So it was several years before people in the United States saw that film. It was snuck out of the country and over to Europe, and it was a big hit in Europe. And it shows these miners who were pretty much all Spanish-speaking immigrants, or their families had immigrated from Mexico. And at one point, the miners are all on strike, and the mine owners get the cooperation of the local police and put all the miners in jail. Well, they thought that would break the strike. But then the women, the wives of the miners, they decided to carry on the strike. And so they were out there in the picket lines, and the strike was successful because of their participation. So not only does this film, way back in 1954, bring up racial and immigration issues, it also has a very strong feminist angle to it. And so that made it, you know, quite an avant-garde film at the time. And so
wow.
I'm glad it survived.
Well, you know, Paul, I do have to go.
Yes, I'm glad you were able to talk with us, Diane, today a little bit.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, and I hope that everybody who's listening will stop by Sunday night at the Veterans Hall reopening and come watch this fabulous film.
Yes, that's great.
7 p.m. Sunday.
Where Soldiers Come From. Thank you for letting us know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, bye now. Thanks a lot. All right. So, Jeffrey, tell me a little bit more, if you weren't finished, about the Salt of the Earth and how you got started.
Yeah, well, just the Salt of the Earth is at the other end of the spectrum. This is one of the classic films, classic labor films, and we're happy to show it here on campus. Dana Frank, a professor of labor studies for decades, is going to be speaking at that film event, and she has shown this film in her classes, you know, maybe hundreds of times. I don't know. She's going to have some very useful things to tell us about that film.
She'll be sort of hosting emceeing that one.
Right, right. So we do more than just show films. We try to have a filmmaker or some knowledgeable person speaking to really make an event out of it. I mean, you could stay home and watch Netflix or go to the video store, if you can find one anymore, and watch a film. But we make it into an event because, in addition to seeing the film and in the company of a lot of other people, we also have some dialogue and presentation and back and forth questions and answers. So that's a way that we can really get a lot more out of the experience of seeing the film and figure out how it relates to our lives now. And at each one of our events, there is going to be some call to action. We're going to relate it to some issue going on currently and locally, and well, here's a way that you can take this newfound knowledge and experience of the film and do something about it to improve our lives today.
And how are these films selected? Is there a process for which films get in, and what right. are they on a big long list for years, or is it year by year?
Our festival has been around for a little while. This is our 13th season.
That's excellent.
And we've had a small core of people, maybe half a dozen to a dozen people, who've stayed with it over the years. We do some of the organizing and try and encourage. We kind of set up a framework and encourage other community groups to get involved with us and pick a subject that they're interested in, and we allow them to pick a film and pick a location, and we'll support them in creating a real work event. So in the case of, for example, Wednesday, April 30th, the United Nations Association of Santa Cruz County picked that night, and signed up the Resource Center for Nonviolence at 7 o'clock in the evening, and they have an international focus of their work in the United Nations Association, and so they selected a few films that have to do with workers and labor organizing throughout the world. For example, one of them is about Haiti. Mm-hmm. We don't get a lot of information about Haiti, and who knew that there actually are labor unions in Haiti? I had no idea, and apparently there are a number of very vibrant labor organizations there, and those organizations feel like that they are really important in holding the fabric of the society together. It's been ravaged by from so many angles, by hurricanes and by economic typhoons as well. You know, it's a really impoverished country. And one thing that's really supporting the economic development there are the labor movements. And they're showing another film about Africa exploitation, mineral exploitation in Africa, and what the people are doing about it. So that's an example of how films are selected. A group may take this on. For example, the film Where Soldiers Come From. It was one of our members who's related to who's involved in the UFW, and they decided to pick that film to show, and so we include it in our whole schedule.
It's back to labor union themes. I noticed that Cesar Chavez was noted at the top. Was this part of the prior to the film festival starting? Was this a film selected by any of the people that you work with?
Well, you know, Cesar Chavez's film was a true labor film. That would have been a perfect film for our
series,
for our festival. And, you know, it was on a track of its own to be released right before Cesar Chavez's birthday this year. So, you know, we couldn't show it in our festival, but we kind of adopted it. And so we helped do some of the promotion. We listed it in our program. It's listed on our website. And we had a big hand in trying to get turnout on the first weekend when it opened on Friday, March 28th. Because that's how the film, you know, this is a regular run film. And how they work is they just count up the proceeds from the first weekend, and that determines kind of its course in the future, how long it's going to stay in the theaters before, I mean, if it gets a poor turnout the first weekend, it's gone.
It's highly determined upon how it's promoted the very first and how successful
How successful it is the first weekend. Sometimes there's a promotion and a film will fall flat, but if it gets really big ticket box office take the first weekend, well, then that increases its stature. It's kind of an older version of how Facebook works. You know, if a lot of people like something on Facebook, it becomes more prominent in everybody else's websites. And so with a film, if a lot of people show up the first weekend, then it sticks around longer, and then more people have that chance to see it. So we did a lot of promotional efforts through our networks, and I'm happy to say when I went to the opening night, the place was packed.
Yes, I was there.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, see, it worked. And the film is still being played. This is the, I think this is the third week. You know, it's shown every day in a matinee at the Del Mar Theater. And our goal was to try and promote it enough so that it would still be playing during our festival. And
Oh, yeah.
We just have one more week. You know, if it can manage to stay on another week, then we will feel like we succeeded.
This festival runs for more than a week, doesn't it?
Yeah, the full range is... April 24th through May 8th. On April 24th, we don't have one starting in Santa Cruz until the 26th, Saturday, but on Thursday night, the 24th, over at San Jose City College, there's a film going to be shown called Citizen Coke. It's about the Coke brothers. And it's sort of a combination between Citizen Kane and Citizens United, and there's a connection there. The film is by Tia Lesson, and Tia Lesson, film buffs will probably recognize her name. She's the main filmmaker who worked on several of Michael Moore's documentaries. And so she's on her own on this one.
Have you seen it yourself?
No, I haven't seen it. It's, again, we are very lucky here. This hasn't even been released. This is kind of a pre-release event. And one of our organizers, who Jimmy Kelly, who started in Santa Cruz, and he's now living over in the Bay Area and teaching labor studies at the San Jose City College, he made a connection with Tia Lesson and her partner, Carl Deal, who were going to be in the area showing a different film. And he heard about this film, and he begged them to come and present their new work. And I think it's not going to be officially shown until May. So this is going to be quite a coup for Real Work to show this film.
It's really...
Yeah.
Really a long selection of films.
Yeah, we're trying to cover all the possible tastes that people might have. And I know in Santa Cruz there's always three or four important things happening at any one time. And so even though you have already scheduled in your life, you might have a one day or one afternoon or one evening in the next couple of weeks that's free. Well, there's going to be a Real Work show that you could go to.
Yeah, and I noticed that there's a variety of speakers. Are all of them speaking for films that they're part of, or?
Well, most of our speakers are going to be the filmmakers themselves, where we were able to get a filmmaker to come, and in some cases, that's not possible, and we'll have somebody filling in. For example. Herbert Biberman is no longer living. He couldn't present Salt of the Earth, so Dana Frank is having to stand in for him. Very interesting program on Monday, April 28th. Very much a local issue. We're looking at the sanctuary camp concept, and we have a couple of films about sanctuary camp, and that's dealing with a kind of a touchy subject in Santa Cruz about the homeless population. There's myths about the homeless here that they all come from elsewhere, and we have tremendous services, and that's why that draws them all here, and they're all drug addicts, and they kill people right and left. Mm-hmm. And the truth, of course, is very different than that. The probably two-thirds or more of the people who were homeless in Santa Cruz were, had homes and were living here before they became homeless. And so this is their hometown. Brent Adams made a film about a concept that he was looking into. How can a community be conscientious about some of their less fortunate citizens and help provide a way for people to actually have a place to live? And why do we have a homeless issues event at the Real Work Labor Film Festival? Well, again, everybody who's homeless, some of the people who are homeless are currently working, and it's just hard for them to get to work every day because they don't have a place to live. And some of them were working before they lost their job, and that's what made them homeless. And some people are, maybe they have some mental conditions that there are no services to treat, and once they could get back on their feet, they would be working again. So homeless people, we consider them part of the, they're part of the working class, and some of them are just having more trouble than most of us. And when somebody has a regular place to sleep and keep their things, that's like a huge step in getting your life together. If there's a way you can keep that together, then you can start building on that to become a much more much more of an asset to the general population in terms of a productive citizen. And so we have those two films, a film by Brent Adams and a film by Jeremy Leonard on the Sanctuary Camp concept. And also Annette March is going to be presenting some of the oral histories that she's filmed, I've seen some of them, and they're really fascinating. It really helps to break down the stereotypes if you actually get to know somebody who doesn't have a place to live. They're no longer part of this mass of the other foreign group of people that you don't want to have anything to do with. They become very real and likable human beings.
And that will also be on Monday?
Yeah, we have those three films on Monday, April 28th. Most of our evening events begin at 7. This one, again, is at the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
And these are, mostly by donation or...
Yeah, all of them are attendance admission by voluntary donation. We're starting off in Santa Cruz again at the Resource Center for Nonviolence Saturday, April 26th, this coming Saturday, 7 o'clock, with a series of short films. Now, our film festival has been around, as I mentioned, for 13 years, and we have some returning filmmakers, for example, Sam Mayfield with her Wisconsin Rising. She's coming back. We're showing Shift Change. We showed that last year. Sometimes a filmmaker will hear about a new film by one of our veteran filmmakers, and we'll show their film again. But anyway, the word gets around in the filmmaker circles about our festival. And somehow this happened that two different film distributors in Madrid, Spain, heard about Real Work. And so we got about eight short films submitted from several different filmmakers from Madrid. And we selected half a dozen of them, which fit into our criteria, our theme. And so we're calling this night the Spanish Shorts. And they're just, it gives a different insight on how the economic crisis that we've experienced here in the United States, how that affected Europe, and particularly Spain. Spain has very high unemployment. One film is about how unemployment and the economic crisis affects personal relationships. It's a couple that are going on their honeymoon, camping out in the city park, for example. another interesting one about the parents are unemployed and oh my gosh, the son has landed a job, and they don't know how to deal with this. It's so different. A lot of humor. It's a very interesting series of films.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Different way of looking at labor.
Right.
From Europe's point of view, what Americans, what we've come to here is unlabored.
So, right. So Friday, May the 2nd, we're having a show at the Cabrillo College Forum in Watsonville at 7 o'clock. And there we're showing a film called Schoolidarity, and that's by a returning filmmaker, Andrew Friend. He was here a few years ago with a film called Workers' Republic, about the door and window factory in Chicago that the Bank of America was trying to shut down. And when they were holding out for their severance pay or their back wages. And after a while, they thought, well, hey, we're sitting down in the factory. Why don't we just take over the factory since nobody else wants to do anything with it? And so this film is about the Chicago teacher strike, and he relates the differences between Chicago and Madison, because there were a lot of teachers involved in the Madison uprising against Scott Walker. And it's really showing how, to break the common myth, the strongest advocates for students and learning are the teachers. And the teachers, in this case, the reason they had a very successful strike was because they had been working for years building a community with the teachers. I mean, with the teachers were building this community with the parents on behalf of the students, and really doing kind of neighborhood organizing to save schools from being closed. There was a movement to privatize schools and turn them all into profit-making charters. And so the teachers had this long history working with the community. And so when it came down to their contract negotiations, and they were really fighting for benefits that would allow them to teach better. You know, it wasn't just about money. It was about class size, and it was about resources available for the students. And so they were able to be successful because of the community coalition they had built. And we're showing it in Watsonville. The host is the Pajaro Valley Federation of Teachers. Mm-hmm. And the Pajaro Valley teachers went through very difficult contract negotiations last year, as did the teachers in the city of Santa Cruz. And in both cases, they didn't really go out on strike, but they did have a lot of educational pickets, and it was some of the same issues. They weren't, they were breaking out of the mold. They weren't, the mold of the myth, which is that the worst thing about education is bad teachers. Well, of course, that's totally opposite of the truth. The teachers are the people who are really promoting the best education. In Watsonville, the Pajaro Valley teachers were holding out for class size. You know, they wanted class size reduction. The district didn't want to guarantee that. And so they held out until they got wording in their contract language that the class sizes would be reduced. I mean, we know that's an improvement in education, and the district wasn't going to promise that. And the teachers forced the district to promise that to the parents and the students.
Right.
And that's what they use the contract struggle about, is to improve education.
We're talking with Jeffrey Smedberg. I'm saying that right, aren't I?
Yeah.
Who's the project coordinator?
Well, I'm one of the organizers.
I'm one of the organizers of the Real Work Film Festival here in Santa Cruz this year, starting April 24th. Well, it's in three counties, and he's in the Santa Cruz area.
Right. We're going to have a whole series of events starting this weekend through May the 8th. A dozen or so events here in Santa Cruz County. One I haven't mentioned is because one of the goals of the Real Work Labor Film Festival, the full name is the Real Work May Day Labor Film Festival, and we include that because we hold the festival each year during the week of May Day.
Uh-huh.
May Day was in history in 1886. There were some struggles for the eight-hour day in Chicago, and there was some violence in Haymarket Square, and some union activists were framed for throwing a bomb, and it's never been proven that they were guilty of that, but a couple of people got hung, and it was a terrible situation. But in commemoration of that, May Day was declared International Workers' Day.
Oh, yeah.
And
still is noted that way.
Right. Well, so International Workers' Day is celebrated on May Day everywhere in the entire world, except in the United States, because this is where the events happened that really sparked that holiday. And it was too radical a concept to be made an official day here. So the powers that be picked a day to honor labor at the far end of the calendar, way in September.
Labor Day.
Yeah. So we're trying to reclaim International Workers' Day in the U.S. as the real Labor Day.
I see.
And so we have a big event happening on May Day, on International Workers' Day, May the 1st. That's going to be 7 o'clock in the evening at the Del Mar Theater. We always have a show at the Del Mar Theater. And the main feature there is called Fixed, the science fiction of human enhancement. The filmmaker Regan Brashear is going to be here. She was one of the original organizers with Real Work back in 2002, and now we get to have her back here as a filmmaker. And so this film is about what sort of technological enhancements or mechanisms that have been developed for people who have some sort of physical or mental disabilities to help them cope like the rest of us. And it brings up very interesting questions about, because some of the enhancements that were first developed for people with physical disabilities have been adapted for people who didn't have any particular physical disabilities, but were just wanting to increase their potential. I think.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why would we include a topic like this in a labor film festival? Well, the reason is that for people, most people are wanting to be actively engaged in some kind of work, and of course, if you have a disability, that it puts an impediment in your ability to be a productive worker. And so, these enhancements can help somebody become, be able to be involved in work and contribute to society in that way. And there's several people in the film who are case studies of these people showing the ways that they have coped with their disability and their ability and how they can continue to hold down a job or do something creative or supportive.
That is, 12 minutes.
Well, there is a short along with that. Oh. There's a short called The Interviewer, 12 minutes, and the main feature is an hour. And right. then we're going to have a panel discussion afterwards talking about some of the interesting concepts that, that come up in this. The interviewer, mm-hmm. the short film interviewer, is quite a mind-bending little film, and I'm not going to give it away, but it's about somebody who comes to a company for an interview, and what happens in this during the course of the interview, because of the person's, the particular disability of the person who's doing the interview, the guy who comes for the interview goes through a complete mental shift and really is kind of enlightened about some things. It's a nice little film.
Very good. Yeah. So many to choose from.
Right. Well, we hope, like spend the we, whole hope we hope people get addicted and come night after
a
night.
Lot. Yeah. Are there any in the... Oh, yeah. There's some in the day and the night. We get lots of choice. Ranges. Times.
Yeah, a few daytime shows. We will have the matinee at 11 o'clock in the mm-hmm. morning on Sunday, April 27th, Salt of the Earth at the Nickelodeon. Then the following weekend, Saturday, May 3rd, we'll have a 2 p.m. show at the Live Oak Grange with, as I mentioned, Wisconsin Rising about the Scott Walker's attempt to stop the labor movement. And also that show is hosted by the Santa Cruz Peace Corral, which is actually going to be giving a short performance of some of the songs that they've been learning this season on labor themes.
That's really, really excellent. We have music. We're going to have a few performers there, too.
Right, yeah, we'll have music at a few events. Longtime participant at Real Work, David Winters, will be playing at the beginning of the event on May Day at the Del Mar Theater.
Uh-huh. And then there's three more days after that, so it goes through the 6th Tuesday.
Right, right. Yeah, we'll miss a few days, but pretty much on most days we'll have an event. A couple of days we'll have double events. For example, Sunday, April 27th, Salt of the Earth matinee at the Nickelodeon Theater, and then just down the street at the Vets Hall, 846 Front Street, 7 o'clock in the evening, Where Soldiers Come From, hosted by... two of the VFW posts, the Bill Motto Post 5888 and the Tres Pueblos Post 7263. A lot of hosts mm-hmm. and sponsors for the Real Work Labor Film Festival. We do, at our events, the admission is by voluntary donation. We do, you know, people can get in to see the film if they're without funds, but some people are generous, and we do count on the contributions there to help defray costs. But I would say them a good portion of the contribution come from local labor unions. We have 24 labor unions in the area that have all contributed anywhere from $50 to several hundred dollars to support the film festival. And we also get support from some local businesses that support our cause. Community Printers always makes a big contribution toward the cost of our printed program, our beautiful printed program.
Yeah, it's excellent.
The Nickelodeon Theater, which operates the Nick as well as the Del Mar, gives us a good deal on hosting events there. The City of Santa Cruz, which actually owns the Del Mar, gives us a break on having a community event there at the Del Mar.
Are there volunteer opportunities for...
Oh, yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Or we can always use a few people to help doing ushering or doing setup or cleanup. And,
okay.
Sometimes we have to move chairs around. Not fortunately, not too many times, but it always helps to have a few volunteers. And we have, of course, all this information we've been talking about is available on our website, realwork.org. That's realwork.org. And you can communicate with us by email at info@realwork.org. Again, R-E-E-L-W-O-R-K. So if you please check out the website. If you have any questions, you can email us. If you are interested in a volunteer position, we'd love to have your help. And you can let us know at info@realwork.org.
Good. I'm hoping that... people would contact you. I'm not sure right now, but if anyone did want to call, they could call the station and talk to Jeffrey. And it's so great that he had a moment to come down here and fill us in, because not often, you know, is anyone... Well, I'm not sure if you've been on other radios, you know, weather stations, talking about this, but it feels good that a free radio could have you.
Right. Well, we appreciate it here. So if you're down in Monterey on Sunday, the May 4th, there's going to be a whole series of great classic labor films, including Salt of the Earth. But before Salt of the Earth, starting at noon, this is at the Museum of Monterey on Sunday, May 4th. Grapes of Wrath,
yeah.
That certainly classifies as a labor film festival. It's a long film, a couple hours long. Grapes of Wrath, and then after that, Redis, which is in the English title for that is The Wave. That's at 2:15. That was about some Italian fishermen who conditions sort of forced them into organizing themselves. Very hopeful film. And then at 3:25, Salt of the Earth. So that's going to be played down in Monterey on that day. So that's a whole afternoon, long afternoon of classic labor film. Salt of the Earth, 1954. So this year is its 60th anniversary. Grapes of Wrath was 1940, and Redis was actually 1936. Quite an old film. But, you know, themes that are still current and potent today.
So encourage people to get there how they can. And there's, for, I know, resource centers, plenty of parking there. If you're a bike rider, you're welcome to bring your bike in, or is there going to be bike valet or anything like that, do you know?
Being no, I don't think we're going to have
involved in that.
I don't think we're going to have the bike valet. Most of the places have a few bicycle parking slots.
Yeah.
But that would be great. Yeah, I would love it if that were our problem, that we had too many bikes to park. I'm sure we could get the bike valet folks to help us out.
Right. Yeah. I've seen it. Some of the, probably like last weekend at Earth Day, there's probably a lot of bikes having to be parked there.
Sure, that's a good example.
So how many of these have you been an organizer for?
Well, this is our 13th year. I've been with The Real Work since the beginning.
Great.
Yeah.
And who else is involved? That's one of the organizers, or several?
Well, let's see. Sarah Ringler is a teacher with Pajaro Valley Schools. She's been with us since the beginning. Daniel Young formerly worked in the buildings and maintenance department at the University of California. He's a veteran involved with the UFW. He's been with us since the beginning. Jimmy Kelly, since the beginning. He's now organizing our events in Santa Clara County at the San Jose City College. Ken Nobler with the United Nations Association. Jennifer Colby, who's a teacher and union member at CSU Monterey Bay, and she's the one who's organizing the Monterey County events.
Mm-hmm.
So we have and there's a few more who have been involved, and it's really a nice working group. We all chip in, and it's all total volunteer effort. People contribute what they can, and somehow we manage to pull it together every year.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It counts, you know, when a lot of people work together and love what it is about that they're doing it for.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
I'd love
to hear more.
Yeah, I could read this little blurb that's in the program about Salt of the Earth.
Okay.
1954. Many families were actually achieving the middle-class American dream of owning their own home with a Chevrolet in the driveway and a Frigidaire in the kitchen, all on a single worker's paycheck. Not quite utopia, as this good fortune was predominantly bestowed on white male workers. Just under the surface, the United States was in the grip of the Red Scare of McCarthyism, which viewed progressive reforms such as child labor laws and women's suffrage as communist plots. Unions, whose aggressive organizing had birthed the middle class, now purged their ranks of Reds, who happened to be their best organizers. Hollywood blacklisted anyone in the film industry who was critical of the military-industrial complex as it had recently been coined. In this social environment, writer Michael Wilson, director Herbert J. Biberman, and producer Paul Jericho, all blacklisted, made a dramatic film based on the 1951 strike against the Empire Zinc Company in Grant County, New Mexico. This trailblazing work used actual miners and their families as actors in the films and dared to challenge racial and gender stereotypes and advance a feminist viewpoint. The filming itself was hampered by vigilante attacks by the Grant County American Legion and deportation of one of the stars. The film was rarely seen in the U.S. in its first years, due in part to the rabidly anti-communist leader of the National Theater Projectionists Union, forbidding members to screen it. The film was, however, smuggled out of the country and widely acclaimed in Europe. What can we learn from a 60-year-old film? Sexism, racism, and oppression still constrict our lives. But by paying attention to our history through such films, our perception of justice is sharpened and our backbone is stiffened. Real Work featured Salt of the Earth in its first season in 2002 and joins the Global Labor Film Festival in bringing this classic back on its 60th anniversary with screenings worldwide.
Wow. 60th anniversary.
Yeah. Only 13th for the Real Work Labor Film Festival, but 60 years of Salt of the Earth. So our entire schedule in three counties, going from April 24th to May 8th, some 24 events showing 32 films, all events. Admission is by voluntary donation. If you're short on funds, we still want you to come and see the films. We think you'll benefit. We think we'll benefit if you see the films, too. So we hope you can make it.
It is really good work, speaking of real work, that you do, that you have this provided, and people ought to be really aware of that. And, you know, go in and invest some time in studying some of these films and enjoying them and learning from them, and you know, give you feedback, et cetera. Is that part of the plan? You'd like to get a lot of feedback afterwards?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We will be passing out evaluation forms at the workshops to hear from people, and you know, we get some good ideas that help guide us in the future. We're always open for new people who want to get involved and help out and participate in some way in next year.
And a phone number for right now, unless you're going to seerealwork.org, is area code 831-469-9467. And that'll be some kind of an info line for...
Yeah, well, that's my home number, but we're happy to.
I wish I would have asked.
No, that's fine. It's printed on our program. That's our official number. But
all right,
we hope you call. We don't get a lot of calls, so please call. Or if you call the station right now, we could have a conversation. Otherwise,
yeah,
I think we're about
anyone
to wrap
wants
this up.
Do so. You have an opportunity right now. 427-3772, and ask any questions, right, about the films and the filmmakers and anything you want to say, and we'd love to hear from you. And so is there any I don't know if I could pull one up if I had to. I was going to say, is there any music that comes to mind that you think it is a real dominant, like, that would describe this? What kind of artists, any of the favorite artists of yours?
Do you have any music by Anne Feeney? She's done she's done some great labor songs, like War on the Workers is one that we sometimes... will play as in the interludes at our events.
Okay. And will you be working like long days during the next few weeks after work, or you know, to get ready for this and then during it?
Well, I have been for some time now. There's always lots of little details to take care of. And I'm sort of a workaholic and always manage to keep busy and never take time off to just to relax or for entertainment. And so for me, it works out. I want to... I want to see some movies. I got to organize a film festival. Then I get to see movies all week.
Here's Anthony.
On the healthcare front, we'd be thinking again. The only way they're going to hear us is if we take to the streets. And I know there are a lot of you here who have some experience doing that, so I think you can testify with me. We have wonderful free speech rights in this country as long as we exercise those rights ineffectively. If our conduct might actually affect the outcome of anything, it's amazing how quickly we can be surrounded by police and paddy wagons. And so I decided if I was going to make a career out of this activism thing, I should have a song we could sing on our way to jail. That's it. Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong, so wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. The rotten law stays on the books, till folks like us defy it. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? So you're a friend of mine. Now the law's supposed to serve us, and so are the police. When that system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail. Your convictions, let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
Yeah. This is by Bev Grant.
We have plowed and we have planted. We have gathered into barns. Done the same work as the men with babies in our arms. But you won't find our stories in most history books you read. We were there. We're still here, fighting for the things we need. We were there in the factories. We were there in the mills. We were there in the mines and came home to fix the meals. We were there on the picket line. We raised our voices loud. It makes me proud just knowing. Shops in New York, from the fields in California, where our children had to work. We fought to make a living. Bread and roses was our pride. Though they jailed and beat our bodies, our spirits.
Touch the bottom of our heart. We were there in the factories. We were there in the mills. We were there in the mines and came home to fix the meals. We were there on the picket line. We raised our voices loud. Makes me proud just knowing.
We are teachers, we are the-